Good evening, everybody, and welcome to our not so regular Wednesday stream.
No, hello Dreblos, and welcome to the Snotcast. I will try not to be as annoying with that as it probably will come
We've
across.
got the sniffles. That is why we didn't stream on Monday.
Yes.
We have got the sniffles. So, yes.
Well, no, this actually gives us an excuse now. I can actually go heblo and mean it.
Heblo. We can say heblo and we can mean it.
Yeah.
The weather here's not been awful. It's been kind of winter sunshine for once.
Occasionally.
Normal late January days. It's been up and down. It's been around. We had the big old storm. Why are we getting all these awful weather warnings now? Oh, it's gonna rain. It's gonna snow. It's gonna be windy. You're gonna die. It's all that kind of stuff.
Whereas most days we have a 40 mile an hour bloody gust anyway,
Yeah, we
then
do.
no one seems to be that bothered about it.
Nobody does seem to be bothered about it. I will remind you that we are still monetized somehow. If you want to support us, the best way to do it is through the Ko-fi, which I have just pinned up there. There's also Super Chat, Super Stickers, PayPal donations, which can go through the Ko-fi, or you can go to the PayPal directly,
Or you can go and support us on the Substack
which
if
I will
that's more to your
fix.
liking.
I've actually got it technically fixed. I'm now just doing the butt work of getting all the stuff on the back end to release.
Yeah.
So the Substack is finally fixed, and I'll be putting stuff up there over the next couple of days, because good Lord, that has been a process.
Oh, and you can also be a member of the channel if you would like, which a few people in chat are and are regular supporters, and for that, we thank you.
Yes, and thank you, Lamented Guide, for the super sticker. You are the super sticker guy,
He
because
must be like the only guy in YouTube's analytics that ever
yeah,
uses those.
I think YouTube probably like owes you money for keeping that feature relevant. So good on you there.
Yes, but make sure that money goes to us instead of YouTube.
The star that remains, because we're talking about the paradox of unpopular elected leaders. I know you guys understand the paradox more than most people would, because we're right out here in the fringes of political YouTube. Hello to all you people who found yourself in the weeds.
Yes, hello.
If this is your first time here,
Sorry.
we're suspicious of you. No,
But I think this is really it is another way to explain a fundamental thing that we agree upon and we think other people need to understand better. This
Yes.
notion that or more begging the question that how can it be? Riddle me this. How can it be that all these democratically elected leaders in and around this region that we call the West
Yes.
tend to be so damn unpopular?
Or that they become unpopular within short order. Or it's there's something I want to explain as we go through this, because a lot of people have been like, oh yeah, well I understand that, but people don't understand, and well, I'll pepper this through this, the utility of the unpopular leader and the way that the general reactionary impetus to mock the unpopular leader and bolster the incoming leader or the alternative leader is very, very important to
Yes.
keeping democracy on the rails, as it were, to keeping the whole thing going. Democracies are such insidious tyrannies because they appear to change, but they don't.
Yes. And I think as well as something that's maybe a bit different from as we would normally do, this isn't going to be like an extremely source heavy stream. I
No.
think there's just sort of the illogic or the illogical nature of it is something that we want to try and explain in as many ways as possible. Because really, it should be obvious to people. I mean, I think of this from like a like almost Reddit midwit mindset of like, well, of course leaders are unpopular because it's one of the fundamental principles of leadership that you are
Yes.
taught if you go and do business management or whatever else, is that your job as a leader is to make people do things that they don't want to otherwise do.
Yes. And sometimes it pays to be an unpopular manager who asks people to do difficult things so you can, get the popular manager to ask the things that you really don't want people to do.
Yes, but I think that starts to beg all these different kind of questions, and one of them we'll fundamentally deal with at the end. But it almost, I would ask the people in chat to consider, what would you think of as a popular leader? I'm not saying just throw one out there or come up with some based world hypothetical where everyone votes for this Chad that's like Hitler but a million times over. No, genuinely, think about what it means to be a popular leader and consider some of the possible paradoxes you might find within that.
Yes.
But for a starting point, really what we want to deal with here is the narrative aspect.
We do, yes.
And the fundamental part of this, I think, is that people don't like politics anymore.
No.
People are retards, and what they'd rather watch is EastEnders.
This is true,
if you could make politics a bit more like EastEnders, well, you might get more people engaged in it.
Again, it's very nuts and bolts. It's very politics is pro wrestling, but here we are. Here we are in the pro wrestling.
Yeah, that speech will be the final nail in the coffin for Keir Starmer. It's a dark decline from here. He has weeks left. Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Inevitable EastEnders, for making it clear to us that Starmer should be gone by now. So I would like Mr. Inevitable West to explain to me exactly why Starmer hasn't gone yet.
Why hasn't Starmer gone yet?
Southport, the riots, taking money from the old people, taking money from the farmers. Is there a single policy Keir Starmer has implemented that's actually, quote-unquote, popular in the press or in conversation you have with people?
Yeah.
No.
Well,
I can't think of one of them.
I was agreeing by saying, no, you're right. Yeah. It seems that the purpose of Keir Starmer is to be unpopular because we've seen this with leaders before. Once you become so unpopular, it almost becomes like an inverse thing.
Yes.
Your popularity bottoms out and people's expectations of you change. So when you make what would normally be considered popular decisions, or you don't do something as badly as people expect, and you have this massive amount of time left, like a Keir Starmer does, you can reset people's expectations and reset the neutral point of who you are. But here's just a very, very simple illustration. Labour... It's amazing, isn't it? The general election came along and Labour was electable at the exact moment that it needed to be.
And do you know what I think's even more hilarious and really goes to prove our point more than anything else? Because ultimately what we're talking about here is a process that is cyclical.
Yes.
Who would have believed you in December last year, January last year, if you said January this year, the Conservatives' approval rating will be back up near, 20-odd percent after Sunak and all that.
Here we go. Yeah, that really you've got this reform relief valve here, and reform and Conservative have converged, and Labour has come down, but really the Conservatives have not, they've not lost any ground.
So
this.
It's almost like those people who were supposed to have their last government ever. I mean, this is not us having a go at zero seats. We respected zero seats for what it was.
Yes.
But a large part of the conversation around it, and part of the way it got co-opted, was that Rishi Sunak was going to kill the Conservative Party, and that was going to be it. They'd never be elected again. Now we're looking at a situation where the main line that everyone seems to be taking is that Starmer's done and someone has to step up. Now, of course, this creates the Nigel Farage-shaped hole, but it's yet to be seen where that'll actually be filled in that manner or not.
Well, there's this idea that Starmer cannot persist at a 30% approval rating.
Mm.
That Starmer cannot persist as an unpopular leader. But he can.
Yes.
He has the next 4 years to do so. He is not going anywhere. The Labour politicians aren't going anywhere. The reason that Rishi Sunak left number 10 wasn't because he was unpopular. It's because he was cycled out. You have to, and I know it's really hard, you have to de-link in your mind the election from the change of face.
Yes.
And you must disconnect the change of face from the idea that the government has changed and its agenda has changed in any meaningful way. These three things, despite being the crayon drawing of politics that you are given, are not linked together.
No, these things are not interconnected in any way, shape or form.
No.
By at best, it is the sort of description of, an Austin Metro steering box, which was a wet broomstick and a bowl of porridge.
What this shows you is that the political establishment in Britain were able to buy themselves a very short period in which they were mildly popular again.
Yes.
What you saw here is the return to normal. It is the mean. It is the idea that Britain is full of people who are unhappy with the political system in general.
Yes.
The cycling round of faces is meant to alleviate that appearance.
And, I mean, let's go through, a little bit of, contemporary British history. Tony Blair was popular. And then no one liked him. And then he lasted for how many years? And then David Cameron was elected, and I don't think anyone liked
Nobody liked David Cameron.
And how long did the Conservative Party last?
Well, they came in as a coalition government.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then we had Theresa May and all these other people who, for argument's sake, were not elected.
Well, then we entered the Brexit era, and it stopped being about...
But then we got Boris Johnson.
Yes.
And he was really popular, and everyone liked him. And then he did eventually go.
And then he was unpopular.
But not because he was
But then he was
out.
Popular again. And then he was very unpopular. We'll get to all of that because it is interlinked with the events that we will see over the last 5 years. The last 5 years illustrate how fake electoral politics is, but how using macro trends you can show how political energy is created, how it's dissipated, the utility of populism. All of these things can be explained through this intriguing form of unpopular democracy. Keir Starmer has a 30% approval rating, but there is no way to shift him. There might not even be local elections before the next election cycle. He is a political fact, whether you like him or not.
Mm.
And you, like I said, you must unlink in your mind popularity from who is in power.
Yes.
The two do not correlate. And often it is advantageous to have an unpopular leader who can make unpopular decisions that can then be cycled out, and a quote-unquote more popular leader cycled back in to push the exact same agenda.
Another cracking example of this, Emmanuel Sports Direct Bag, he, as far as I can tell, has been hated every single moment he's been there.
Not really. There's been some reversals here.
Oh, no, is he now popular again?
No, he was... The thing is, he's been wildly unpopular to bobbing around kind of 40 to 50% during his entire time. The unpopularity of French presidents of the 2000s is quite legendary. They are a great example of the fact that the French do not want any of these people, and yet they are permanently in power.
Yes, and I think well.
This is from 2017, though.
For the sake of a bit of clarification, we are, at least in this regard, going to assume that polling is real.
Yes. What we're saying is portrayal. That we're not talking about reality. It is actually impossible to know how popular Keir Starmer is in reality.
Well, do you know what? I would love if someone, you know, on Twitter or whatever else could either short summarize or possibly even draw me a picture of what it is the people want.
Yes. It's first principles. What do people want? You don't know that, and you can't know that.
And the polling they don't know it either.
They don't know it either. But anyway, what we're talking
about... Not
until
you tell them anyway.
Is the representation in narrative that is that Emmanuel Macron was hovering just kind of about the 35% range. It went even further down with the Gilets Jaunes protest.
The yellow jackets and all that.
Yeah. The yellow jackets.
Whatever it was, yellow vest. I can't remember. Yellow J skits.
Ah, the yellow J skits. God. But the point is that.
You keep going up.
Yes. The point is that I've actually forgotten to reopen one of my links here, is the issue. The point is. Sorry.
I've got it there after
the I do have it up, yes. Here we go. That's the one I forgot to open. There we go, yes. Bored Macron's. Desperate attempt to stay relevant backfires. This is from 2025. What we see, the French president's approval ratings fall to record low after ill-advised exchange with TikTok influencer. That's being blamed, but really...
Is that a record low that goes below the record before?
Well, yes, it does.
Is this a lowest approval rating since, end quotes, records began?
As we see here is the trajectory of Macron. What you saw was he was elected as a popular leader, and then what he did was he did a Keir Starmer.
Yes.
Almost exactly. He went down below 30%. He was down there on about 22%, I believe, was the bottom. Then you ended up with him, you know, he surges before the next election. And again, you end up here. This is the it's got election lines here as well. First term, second term, and it's got all kinds of different data points here. But you can see here that during his first term, he did plummet down, but then his popularity stabilized about 40%. He was still able to be cycled back in. He still made it through that cycle. And then his popularity, as soon as he got into his second term, it took another hit, and it came down to where it was now. But he is still the French president. He is still in power. He is somebody who has survived for the best part of a decade whilst in Keir Starmer's position.
Well, let's say, you know, other than the brief period here at the start of 2020, which is something we will get to, Macron's approval rating is never above 50%.
Never. It never really reaches the 50% mark once it drops below it, ever.
And
but
it begs the question, though, how can a man who, in his first term, his approval rating was, you know, as you say, barely above 20%, gets in again? And I think there's a myriad of reasons for that, but fundamentally, the mass is stupid.
Yes.
And it knows comfort.
Yes.
And quite literally, it's better the devil you know.
Well, the incumbent always has an advantage.
Yes.
That's just statistical. The incumbent always has an inbuilt advantage, with very rare exception in elections. And all of these factors add together. People don't understand that the shape of the political system and all of these little defaults, all of these little pushes that keep these people in power are what matter.
Yes.
It isn't public perception, real or not. And we can't even tell you how real these numbers are.
No.
We have, this is what the pollsters say they are, and this is what we have to accept. But even within their own narrative, these people do not make sense. They do not make sense in terms of how democracy is supposed to work. But anyway, I won't belabor the point too much. We have a few examples here as well. Macron is not the only example.
Do you know what I find interesting? I suppose maybe because we are viewing this information on a shorter sort of time period, but I would expect that, given enough time, a politician's approval rating would vacillate rapidly and up and down and up and down and up and down until eventually it got to a mean, at least in some regards.
You know, yes.
If there was actually a aggregate opinion that could be reached, you would expect it to track up and down and up and down and up and down until it reached roughly that point. But that's never what seems to happen.
No, well, it's because of the shortness of cycles. Within democracies, this process is extremely important. You see the refreshing of political energy when elections come up, and you see the expending of political capital until Macron will eventually be replaced, which will be a moment of catharsis. The moment of catharsis we'll get to, but here is another good example, which is Justin Trudeau. Again, I'd like you to show you, there's an inflection point here, and that inflection point is very, very important. There's another inflection point here, and that inflection point is also extremely important, as we'll get to. But Trudeau, again, he was a popular leader at first. He did have a degree of popularity. He was very heavily pushed by the press, as all these people are. And then his popularity collapsed until we reached 2020, where it goes back up. But again, it hovers around this kind of 50, 40% range. Once it falls below 50%, with one small exception here, it never really goes above it. It always tracks the major area is under 50%. And here we see this slow expenditure of remaining political energy until, again, we reach this kind of 20% point intersecting with an election, and then the leader is cycled out. Mm. But he is unpopular because he is being cycled out. He is not being cycled out because he is unpopular.
Yes.
That's what this shows.
Well, someone was trying to make a point in chat just a moment ago, and they were saying something to the effect of the fact that these leaders are unpopular and they do carry on with these agendas goes to show how committed they are. No, you're missing the bit in the middle. They are committed to the institution, and the institution, as it operates, does so with an agenda in mind.
Yes.
These people aren't committed to the agenda they promote. They're committed to the institution they work with to promote an agenda.
Yes.
They couldn't care what the agenda is. No. There is all these little disaggregating points that need to be identified before you realise why the unpopularity isn't just there, but also in a certain regard works for them.
Yes, there's an important utility to having leaders who are willing to expend political capital, knowing that someone will come in behind them who has generated it at their expense.
Yes.
And the at their expense is a very important thing here, because people feel they have to have a team to cheer for.
Of course.
The UK election, Starmer is a good example of that energy not being created. Starmer's biggest problem isn't the fact that he couldn't be cycled in being unpopular. That's not the problem at all. You can be cycled in and out, being as unpopular as you like. Hmm. It doesn't matter how popular you actually are. The worry that he has is that he isn't able to create political energy. And that is why these leaders are cycled out, because they run out of political energy and political capital. And we'll keep going with this, though. Again, Justin Trudeau's star power dimmed after weathering pandemic and Trump. He's only just been dislodged, yep. But he's been talked about as this Canadian hate figure for an extremely long time, since the shine of the lockdowns wore off.
Gay woke, son of a Cuban dictator that I can't quite remember, Fidel Castro. Yes. I mean, to be fair, I can remember people whinging about Trudeau as this woke, unlikable leader all the way back to like the early Jordan Peterson stuff in like 2016.
I knew we should cover this because people started talking to me about, oh, Starmer, he might be done. And I just actually sent somebody a picture of Justin Trudeau and a picture of Emmanuel Macron. And they just kind of like replied, oh dear, we're fucked, aren't we?
Yeah.
Because really, these people have done it. We are in some ways behind, in some ways ahead.
But I mean,
Canada has been a very clever test case for this.
There is one absolute boss bitch that has done even better than these two. And that's Angela Merkel.
Well, Angela Merkel was somebody who became extremely unpopular despite her massive bubble of like German media. The German state and German culture and German media is more locked down than we are in the UK.
Hmm.
It's not talked about. It's done relatively quietly in certain cases, but the environment, the normal background political environment in Germany is insane. It is wilder than you will find here in the UK, possibly the orders of magnitude. Those of you who know, the things I hear out of Germany are highly disturbing and have been for a very long time, but this was her unpopularity in the wake of the migrant crisis. She had somebody who was portrayed as universally beloved. She ended up with this image problem.
Yes.
And then a bit of a link here, what you got was, with all of these leaders, Merkel's a good example, and Boris Johnson, we've not gone to yet, is an even better example, is the approval ratings soared during the quote-unquote COVID-19 crisis. During the lockdowns, these unpopular incumbents were universally portrayed domestically and internationally as statesmanly.
Hmm.
And as soon as people thought it was within their interests again to suck up to these people, they did. It is one of the most powerful examples of how malleable public opinion is.
Yes.
And how, even if it is genuine, even if this isn't just them saying that they are popular, simply them saying they're popular is accepted. This process could not have happened. They could have just said it has. But if people believe it has happened, it might as well have happened anyway.
It's self-affirming.
Yes.
I know it's something in the chat. Why aren't we forgetting about Jacinda Ardern? Yes, another person who ruled for 6 years and no one liked her whatsoever.
To be fair, I actually had some Jacinda Ardern stuff. She's another great example. I was going to mention it offhand, but Jacinda Ardern is basically just New Zealand Merkel.
Mm.
She's an unpopular leader imposed during the lockdowns who initially became popular and then became unpopular because of her handling of and after the lockdown. Jacinda Ardern is another perfect example of one of these disposable, unpopular leaders. Yes, Jacinda Ardern's a very good example. We have Olaf Scholz. Olaf Scholz has undergone basically the exact same trajectory here, in that he was initially popular, but now he has become wildly unpopular. It says here that he has, where's the actual figure here? Because he's a slightly older one. But he's bobbing up and down around kind of 25% anyway. The residual kind of pull that Merkel had as this magical leader, as this magical female leader of Germany, evaporated when she was cycled out. They tried to keep her in for as long as possible.
Yeah.
You remember the whole ill health thing? They really, despite her unpopularity of the migrant crisis, her long tail of popularity was quite long. We'll get onto that and the changeover between Scholz and Merkel in the next one. But Olaf Scholz is another example of somebody who is unpopular, but somebody who will very likely be in power. Here we go. Here's the Pew Research Center. I want to point out as well that a lot of these highly unpopular leaders like Merkel, or controversial leaders in their home countries like Merkel, are universally loved abroad.
Well, Trump thinks Star Wars doing a great job.
Well, it's also, you know, the fact that populist leaders, people like Trump, are liked domestically, but they are heels abroad.
Yes.
This is a deliberate framing that these people have legitimacy. All you get through the international news filter is the legitimacy propaganda of someone like Merkel, of someone like Macron.
The best example of that has got to be Netanyahu.
Yes.
Netanyahu is the darling of the international sphere. However, as far as I'm aware, he's hated by a considerable portion of both the left and the right in Israel. So,
like, imagine if Boris Johnson was still in office. That's what Benjamin Netanyahu is like. If you're like, imagine if Boris Johnson was still in office and like persecuting a war. I almost feel sorry for the Israelis. I do, because we've gone this entire time, and it's not part of the story. But despite it not being part of the story,
speaking of things that are popular,
yes, we must reaffirm our love for the nation of Israel.
Oh, deep,
our deep,
undying
our
love.
Our deep, the most legitimate state, the most real state.
If there were 7 billion people on this earth and all 6,999,999,999 all hated me for loving Israel, I'd love it even more.
it's anyway.
And don't you forget it, chat. Let's see some hearts and some Stars of David. Come on. You know you've got it. You can show your love for Israel here.
Oh, dear.
But it indicates an important point here.
Yes.
Domestic popularity does not factor in to the effectiveness of a liberally democratic elected leader.
No.
Something like their opinions amongst the international elite class.
Yes.
Are more important.
Yes.
What a surprise, eh?
Well, what we have here really is... It's to do with political capital and hegemony. I want to explain this in full here. And political capital for establishment figures, for those who understand political capital, is just literally like the amount of political energy they can muster, the amount of political patience they still have from the electorate. It is quite literally how much people are willing to tolerate from them politically.
Have you had up to here with this person?
Yeah. For establishment figures, it's constantly refilled and rebuilt, as it was for Macron, as it was for Merkel. There is a constant feed of propaganda because the current elite exercises hegemony over areas of all life. It was normal in France, and it was normal in Germany during the lockdowns to have this absolutely, as it was in Britain, insane propaganda towards the democratic leader. And that works.
Yep.
It just works. In terms of populism, I just put a populist is just a politician who has not yet burned through all his political capital, or not the majority of it. Another component of that is a populist must also never appear to be in power, or he will be blamed for the permanent agenda put forth by the consensus of the elite class.
To come back to the sort of first two points here, it just made me think of something. What COVID allowed unpopular leaders to do was to remind the populace that you elected me,
yes,
to do this tough thing, so woe unto me that I have to do it. And it's almost a sympathy play at that point, that these people, through being the popular representative, allow themselves to be seen as subject to the sort of conditions that they're in.
This is the manoeuvre I believe that they're going to try with Keir Starmer. I believe Keir Starmer will be portrayed as the reluctant manager of Britain, and that he is a safe pair of hands.
The situation that happened in Southport has been thrown into his hands,
yes,
and now he has to deal with it.
The absurdity of portraying Trump as an insurgent force whilst he is the candidate of the GOP and then now for the second time president is in aid of keeping the perception of him not being in power. For his first term, he was portrayed as betrayed by the system. We've been through this before, the whole thing about, you know, him saying to withdraw troops in Syria and them just lying to him. All the excuse-making about Trump's first term was that he wasn't really in power.
Well, he surrounded himself with all his enemies so that they couldn't run roughshod over him, or
yeah,
whatever other excuse people had.
He didn't appoint Kushner. Kushner appeared out of nowhere for some reason.
Yeah.
But the absurdity of the position that they've adopted is in aid of keeping this delicate balance because over the next 4 years, you are going to watch Donald Trump burn through his political capital in order to inject infinity immigrants into America in the same way that Boris Johnson did.
I think in one regard, though, he has enough, quote-unquote, charisma, and Americans are Americans, so... I mean, I don't have anything nice to say, but I think they might actually get away with it.
No, I think he'll be a deeply controversial figure by the end of his second term. In the same way Obama was. He is Obama for boomercons.
They'll need to Clinton him.
Possibly.
They'll actually have to come up with enough scandals that even, like, people that I don't want to name because I don't want to feel like I'm being too mean would go on Twitter and go, well, Trump's really sold us this time.
Ugh, God damn it. Well, it's very important here because what happens to keep these unpopular leaders in power is establishment coalitions. In European democracy especially, if you look at the last decade of elections in both France and Germany, you have a combination of what is referred to as the cordon sanitaire and the grand coalition.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, what you get is when a populist party appears in Europe, for example, all the parties collude to keep them out of power. The populist party is then either compromised or pre-compromised, i.e. Maloney, or arrested, i.e. Golden Dawn in Greece. The political system... as it's seen as a top-down hegemony, burns through the remaining political energy of the established parties whilst building the political credibility of its supposed insurgent party.
And due to the iron law of oligarchy, as that insurgent party becomes more and more an effective party and a party ready for government, it doesn't become a party ready to subvert the institution.
No.
It becomes a party that's become subverted by the institution it wants to be a part of.
The thing you must keep in mind is that managerial democracies are run by a permanent bureaucracy. The nuts and bolts of state, the people who staff the departments, the people who actually write and grant the welfare checks, are the people in power.
Mm.
So this false cycling of elites needs to create political capital to get people to buy in.
Trump the unifier.
Yes. The final begrudging removal of unpopular leaders is an important release valve and allows them to have the sins of the middle class put upon them like a sacrificial lamb. We went through this process on our Heels and Faces stream. We've talked about this process quite a lot, but the creation of heroes and villains in the political narrative rely on each other. You believe in the hero because he will vanquish the villain.
Of course.
And you hate the villain
because he will be vanquished by the hero.
Yeah, because you want the hero to triumph over him. In the same way, you are going to watch a match in wrestling with a wrestler that you quote-unquote hate.
What's the Douglas lose. Adams one? Everyone votes anyway because no one wants the wrong lizard.
Yeah, exactly, yes. Nobody wants the wrong... It's all the fact that nobody wants the wrong lizard. But here we have French election candidates withdraw in bid to block far right. What we saw was a giant electoral pact that meant that... Put my little tweet up here. What happened was a party that had effectively a 10-point lead received far less seats than the two parties that had... Well, a 10-point delta between them.
They got UKIP'd.
Yeah, they basically got UKIP'd. But not they got UKIP'd deliberately. What you saw was the largest party returning less seats because of a grand electoral pact.
Yes.
They basically got a little electoral computer, figured out the best arrangements of character withdrawals, and then did that. They fixed the system to minimize the number and make sure that it was the entire political establishment versus Le Pen. Le Pen is someone who is compromised. Le Pen will play ball, not if, but when she comes to power.
Yes.
In the same way that the AFD, Nigel Farage, and Trump played ball when he was elected. They'll kick and they'll scream and they'll pretend that they didn't, but all of these parties have signaled that they will play ball.
Mm.
If they didn't signal that they would play ball, we'll get to what happens at the end. If you don't signal you're going to play ball. But this is the result. This is the cordon sanitaire. This is the grand coalition. This is the electoral maths making. It doesn't matter how unpopular your leader is if the entire political system colludes to get, quote unquote, the correct result for that moment in time.
Yes.
That is what this was. And it's very obvious. I've been over this ad infinitum on social media. But this is what happens. They can just do this. And it doesn't matter how popular or unpopular we are in a situation like that. Again, here's a little, just a little, God knows who, where this came from. It's an ABN Ambro.
Some German Economic Bureau.
Yes, it is.
Website.
But, they are correct. Spotlight. German elections. Grand coalition most likely result. February 26th parliamentary elections were held, blah, 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 blah. But what you see is, in terms of the polling, is that once again, you will have a grand coalition. You will have, you know, you've got Union, AfD, SPD, Greens, BSW again. And what you'll see is a union between two or three of these parties. The AfD does not have the political energy to have an absolute majority in the way that the party in Poland did. If you ever read my my little Substack piece on Poland about what happened, how Donald Tusk got back in. If the populist party drops below 51%, which it always will do, the establishment parties are able to get around it and create these grand coalitions to keep the unpopular democratic leaders in power.
Yes.
Because of the shape of the political system. This is all stuff that is really, even within the liberal framework and liberal narrative, you are allowed to do this, in quotes.
Well, what...
This is good electioneering. But really what it shows is that the political system is so contrived that even with the amount of propaganda you have to do 15 different layers of fiddling to get the number out of it that you need. But that frame is set from above. The result is predicted, and then you shape the entire electoral system and campaign to get the...
To
fit the result.
But yeah, it's like you are setting it all up on some sort of pendulum and you are weighting it from one side to the other. Meanwhile, some guy's playing with where the bloody fulcrum is. So it's always tipped against you because the way that the system measures electoral weight is always bent or blended in some fashion so that you can't physically make up enough of it. There is no space for you to do so.
Yes. This, I think, is the meatiest article, and I want to go through quite a few of the graphs and stuff in here, because this is quietly a very, in retrospect, powerful admission of how power works, how elections work, and how the macro trends of approval rating of leaders shows you how the public opinion is set from above.
Mm.
This is a great worked example of the myth of public opinion. Faced with a sprawling global crisis, world leaders have begun setting policies into motion that will have vast economic and health implications and will almost certainly play an outsized role in defining their legacies.
The coronavirus outbreak has already shifted the political terrain in a number of countries, swiftly impacting how heads of state are viewed by their constituents. As New Morning Consult political intelligence data illustrates...
Yeah,
off again.
Sorry.
Prime Minister Boris Johnson had the most dramatic shift in fortune. His net approval rating has risen by nearly 30 points in a matter of days. Macron, Merkel, Trudeau, and Australian Prime Minister Scott Morrison...
Scott Morrison's another example. I'm sorry, my Southern Hemisphere friends, I didn't do Jacinda Ardern and the various horrendously unpopular Australian leaders, but I might do an upside-down special at some point, so...
have all had their net approval rating increased by double digits since March 11th, when the WHO declared the coronavirus to be a public global pandemic. The data stems from approval tracking in 9 countries with between 315 and 616 surveys in each country per day, released in 7... Yeah, blah, 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 blah. Anyway, the point being...
Here is WHO declares pandemic. We even see a lift here for Trump.
Too. I was just about to say that.
Yes.
Is that not interesting that even Trump, whose base really should have not approved of it, his approval rating went up, either as a consequence of his own base rejecting him for it, or people switching over to him because he'd done something that he wasn't expected to. And I think this further proves our point about Trump that we always said.
Yes.
The COVID lockdown did not happen despite populism.
Yes.
But as a consequence of it.
Partially, yes. It is much easier to sell your population on something like the lockdowns if you already have a decent approval rating.
Hmm.
I'd say that the delta here... Here we go. Global approval ratings. Boris Johnson. just ridiculous. And here's the one for Boris Johnson as the outbreak unfolds. You saw he was disapproved of by kind of the middle of 2019, mostly because of the whole Brexit thing. And then you end up with him as the lockdown leader. There's the traitors' parliament and all that. He comes to power.
Well, of course, in this period of time, between sort of November 2019 and March 2020, what do we get? Boris doing the populist act. And
yes.
He's defending his comments about women in burqas looking like letterboxes and all this kind of stuff, and it's all very hoorah.
It's based Boris.
Yeah.
I'm amazed about the amount of people who don't seem to remember based Boris. Do you remember based Boris? Remember Boris Johnson being sold by The Guardian as the most right-wing leader that the UK will ever have? You remember that? That was during this time period here. He became a nominally popular leader, and then he became an even more popular leader. Like I said, 30-point delta by some measures.
Yes.
Because, well, what happened? The establishment, the news media, and all of the legitimizing media in unison preached the praises of the incumbent leaders. That's why you see these ridiculous double-digit rises in approval rating. One, you know, the government leads public opinion. Public opinion does not lead the government. Like, this is extremely good proof.
Someone in chat saying, yeah, I bet you don't want Thatcher back. I mean, I wouldn't mind. I'd have some decent information for Lord Mountbatten.
But to further
prove your point, seeing Japan there,
yes,
is again reminding me of the inverse of what you were saying earlier on. Shinzo Abe was, in some respect, a populist candidate. Yes. He was relatively popular in Japan. Was he popular on the international stage? No.
No, he wasn't.
And he's actually the only leader here that seems to have lost head of state approval during that period.
It's because the international press were criticising Japan for not locking down fully.
But again, because he did, in some regard, what you could argue, the populace might have wanted more.
Yes. He became less popular, which is interesting. But that's where the core of it here. When you the liberal, so kind of social liberal states, as it were, as in Germany, the UK, and France, where there's a high degree of deference and relative, you know, the UK has as a controversial populist, and France and Germany both have unpopular incumbents, they're able to harness this political energy and then disperse it again. But the dispersal phase, as we saw over, you know, all of this, sorry, where's the Justin Trudeau track and all that? Yeah, all of the, you can see the slow kind of 2020 through
the macronometer.
Yeah, the macronometer. This is him during COVID expending his political energy. This is what all of these people are meant to do. This is what this bump in approval was for. This is why it was instilled, and this is why it worked. Mm. Because perception of politicians is top-down and not bottom-up, and that is the only way this happens.
Yes.
Well, the effect was very extreme in these social democracies, but we have to talk about now a figure that looms large still over politics, a figure as large as Tony Blair. We have to talk about Tony Blair and the myth of popular consent. Because when Jacinda Ardern, I was going to bring up in this section actually, because Jacinda Ardern's a good example. When Jacinda Ardern left New Zealand politics, she was extremely unpopular, but she was offered all kinds of jobs with NGOs on the international stage. And I believe.
Nick Clegg.
Yeah. Nick Clegg, I believe. The most famous example, though, is Tony Blair becoming Middle East peace envoy and then becoming more powerful than you can possibly imagine as the head of the Tony Blair Institute.
Mm.
He is more powerful than pretty much any world leader, maybe with the. Well, not any world leader, because he is actually doing things. He is not a figurehead. He is the head of his organization.
He is engaging in unelected governance.
Yes.
Across a global scale.
Yes.
And for that, he is celebrated in the elite class. And I think almost he is one of the few individuals where we can get that understanding of maybe where public popularity does fall. I think if you ask the average person who, in living memory, was working and engaged in the world around them during the Blair government,
yeah,
they will turn around and go, I don't like that man. He did Iraq. but he did do some things right that we didn't like at the time, but they were the correct thing.
Well, who would you trust more to have someone assassinated? Tony Blair or Boris Johnson?
Yeah.
Tony Blair isn't popular, but no one would ever say that he was stupid.
No. He's the closest we'll ever get to a Putin character.
Yes, he is. Putin is Tony Blair.
Yeah. Putin is what Tony Blair wished he could have done. And in some respect, I also wish the same.
Yes, he is the power pragmatist.
Mm.
He is in power because he's good at it. And especially within the current political moment. Within the post kind of mid-90s political environment, Tony Blair was the perfect British politician, and he is still one of the perfect international politicians. It doesn't matter what people think of him. It didn't matter what people thought of him when he was in power. He eventually got cycled out and ended up with Gordon Brown holding the bag.
And
if you
take the time as well to, I mean, that new Machiavellian one or whatever it was called.
The Powell one, yes.
The Jack Straw one that I read about Blair and some of the other books that are out there about those involved in his government at a high level at the time, they recognised a lot of very simple facts. That, one, elected leaders are not really in power to any great degree, and the only way to really remain in the position of an elected leader is to do as you please, but at the same time, hear the populace out.
This is from
27th of January, so
this is
Monday.
2 days ago. This is the Telegraph, who was recently bleating about all the grooming gang stuff. David Green, a return to Blair. This is like AA vindicated the article.
Yeah. Telegraph is saying they want Blair back.
Telegraph says we want Blair.
New Labour.
How much more obvious could you make it?
Even Gordon Brown's hanging about in the background like a slightly awkward wet fart.
It's Telegraph going, New Britain, guys. Woo! Blairism's better than this. We're here. Failure to cut benefits or assign personal responsibility to those in receipt shows how far Starmer has strayed from the New Labour project.
I mean, is this not exactly the perfect example of what we're talking about? Blair is a man who, towards the end of his premiership, we might call it, was genuinely hated by quite a considerable number of people. And he managed to get away with that by sticking Gordon Brown in his place. But now we have the Telegraph, the Tory Graph, an institute of British conservative media, turning around and going, Starmer's that bad, we want Blair back.
Yes, and this is exactly the political manoeuvre that we said they would do.
So what we now have, for an absolute certainty, is that the Overton window in Britain goes from Starmerite Blairism.
No. It goes from Blairite Blairism
Starmerite
to Cameronite Blairism
yes.
to Mayite Blairism to Boris Blairism to Liz Truss Blairism to Rishi Sunak Blairism and then to finally to Starmer Blairism. But Starmer Blairism is a bit too diluted, so it needs a bit more Blair syrup in it.
Mm.
Yes. They've diluted the Blair too much. We need to return and get back to real Blair. Tony Blair is the perpetual leader of Britain in the post-Soviet era. John Major was a holding pattern. He would check his watch. He is the permanent leader of Britain, whether you like it or not. And that really is we're arriving here at some of the end point of the paradox. But we've got, well, where does all of this lead? Why is all of this done? Why do all these convoluted electoral cycles take place if the people who are cycled in are as safe as the people who are cycled out?
Excuse me? It's different this time.
Yes.
Because it changes everything.
This,
and come 2029, Starmer is going to get it. Even though he's going to be out of power 3 weeks ago, he's really going to get it in 2029.
Yeah. God. It's all kind of buying time and tiered containment.
But it matters not, because Starmer won't get it in 2029. Rachel Reeves or somebody else will.
We'll get them in 20... Yes. The thing is, Starmer can be replaced.
Yeah, this is what I mean. He can be Corbyned out.
Or he might not be.
Yeah.
He can be rehabilitated. it doesn't really matter. Schultz is Merkel. Merkel is Schultz.
Mm.
Truss, Sunak, all of these people were replaceable faces. But it's all about efficiency. It's all about not having to replace the face if you have to. It's a form of kind of political capital conservation.
Yes.
If you can maintain the status quo and get people to expend immense amounts of political energy to replace the status quo with something almost identical to the status quo, but with someone at the head of it they quote-unquote feel a bit better about,
yes,
then that is how you create this political twilight. That is how we've had political history quote-unquote end.
Yes.
That is the illusion of Francis Fukuyama. It is hegemony. They control both sides of the process, and the replacement doesn't matter. The replacement takes longer and longer. You have these perpetually unpopular leaders who are then replaced by these populists who are exactly the same.
Yes, and I've got a couple of sort of notes here.
Yes.
In a myriad of ways, we don't ever deal with the question on its own of, are our leaders or the political bodies they work for fit for purpose? Rather, we deal with questions of popularity so that we continue to play up into this bottom-up illusion of how politics works. But popularity, really, is just a backstop against more strident political actors. And this goes both for and against us in some respect. Strong leaders engage in action against the will of the mass for the maintenance of the polity and its resources. This means at any and all times, the media, polling organisations, the intelligence community, any aspect of the permanent bureaucracy can all act in tandem through the medium of popular sentiment to halt and besmirch executive actions and, God forbid, if need be, coup a government. And this is ultimately the point. That even if we take for granted that the AFD or Nigel Farage or whoever else gets elected and they do, you know, try and deport 2.5 million people or whatever it is, it would be infinitely easier for all the members of the sort of permanent bureaucracy to shake hands with one another and go, let's paint this guy as a villain.
Yes.
As someone who's deeply unlikable, and he's not doing what the people actually want, and here's the consequences of the policies they want to advocate. And do you really think that's popular?
Well, what you see as well is that all of these people are able to be part of the conversation, in quotes, because they are handled with kid gloves. We saw what happened. Golden Dawn, I've talked about them before, used to be Greece's third biggest political party. They were portrayed in the press as a neo-Nazi thug organization, and they were sentenced to 13 years in prison. Some of them are now out of prison, but their political standing was completely destroyed. And this is what happens to genuinely insurgent parties. Whilst the holding pattern of coalitions takes place, these parties can either be absorbed, and many of them have pre-compromised leaders like Maloney in the first place, or like Golden Dawn, they can be destroyed. Or like the BNP. The BNP never had, well, it did have certain of its members jailed. It was persecuted throughout its existence. But by the end of 2010, it was losing energy because of the leaking of the members list and the subsequent attacks on anyone associated with it.
I think this is maybe a more insidious,
yes,
and actually, in a manner, more long-term effective strategy. Well,
initially that the BNP were banned from prison, guard duty, and the police. And then there was talk about barring them from public life in general, in quotes, but also from banning them from being teachers. This never took place because the BNP basically was destroyed before it needed to, but this was on the cards if they had retained enough political energy.
But instead of, and I'm not saying that what happened in Greece was better in any sort of way, but they had to go through the route of legalism. Yes. And they had to engage in a limited and legal sort of method to combat Golden Dawn.
Yes.
The British press and the bureaucracy around that went one step further. They engaged in an unlimited and no-hold-bars public sort of bust-up that put not just the people leading the BNP at risk, but anyone that thought about voting it or voting for them.
Someone put in chat, no, it's because of Nick Griffin's corruption. Actually, I have a bit of... No one quite knows what happened with the BNP's finances. There's a lot of theories that they may have had their money seized directly by the state and then they just laughed at them. There's all kinds of theories, but the BNP really politically became a dead dog when it became clear that its members list and its members were right, fair game. It was open season on them.
Mm.
The backbiting and infighting after that point is irrelevant. They became a organization that no longer had the protection of a quote-unquote legitimate political party.
Yes.
Whether you like them or not, narratively, Reform is portrayed as a legitimate political party. The AFD is portrayed domestically, at least, now as legitimate political party. Le Pen, despite all the hyperbole, is still portrayed as the head of a legitimate political party, one that you do not suffer materially for belonging to.
Well, even more so, we can think about Reform in this case. They don't need to shut down Reform, because for Reform to operate at a party in the scale that it does, it must abide by the Equality Act.
Yes.
It must abide by vetting.
Yes.
It must abide by, you know, parliamentary standards and this, that, and the next thing. So as it stands, as a political vehicle, it's already snubbed before it's got to where it's going.
Again, people in chat proving the point that really the BNP was dead before this. They didn't need to persecute it anymore because it was dead. It was having financial troubles. There was a lot of rumours flying about. All I can say is that we don't actually know what happened with a lot of the BNP stuff. There's a lot of rumours. A lot of people like to blame each other for it. But really, we don't fully know what happened there. A lot of people have their version of it. But that's all we can say. No, I wasn't there. And quite frankly, go away. Bye.
But I maybe for the last 5 or 10 minutes here, though, want to deal with a fundamental question that I think picks apart everything we're really dealing with here. Oh, but don't sneeze.
Oh no, the sneezes are coming. Keep going, yeah.
But I'll ask you, chat. I want people to not just think about this just now, but genuinely go away and think about this for a while. Would you even want a quote-unquote popular leader? Would we, given the values that we support, the political objectives that we would like to achieve, are we benefited by having a leader that is popular to the mass? And I think fundamentally no, because the manner in which you become a popular politician requires you to do things that are fundamentally antithetical to any agenda that we would have.
Yes.
And this is by design.
The point is that once somebody's on the ballot as a legitimate politician, once there is a legitimate election being held to elect that person, and then they are allowed to be in power, what does that signal to you? If you don't believe that there has been some sort of political revolution, then you must understand the series of filters that people go through.
Yes. And someone making the point there in chat, depends if some of the things a populist would do. On immigration, yes. Everything else, no. But there is the point. They are a populist for this system.
Yes.
And we, I think the vast majority of people in chat would second this opinion. We recognise that the system that sits before us cannot do what we want it to.
Yeah.
And again, this is by design. These institutions, for the most part, aren't actually designed to do anything.
No.
They're just designed to not do a very specific subset of things.
It's exactly true. And what you are doing is you're engaging in the political process as if it was genuine. A lot of people say, oh, yes, I understand this. But if you understand that you wouldn't entertain the idea that Starmer was done because of his approval rating.
Yes.
You wouldn't really consider that important. And we don't consider that important at all. I don't consider Starmer's approval rating important.
And if Goldman Sachs and JP Morgan.
Yes.
And, you know, a couple of big Wall Street guys all came out tomorrow and said, we really don't like what Keir Starmer's doing with Britain.
Look at Keir Starmer's approval rating and look at what Liz Truss got down to.
Yep.
Liz Truss was replaced because the institution said it's time for Sunak.
Well, no, I thought it was the IMF that replaced
well,
that.
Well, basically, everybody, all the international money people, everyone stopped in and said, actually, Sunak was supposed to win that leadership election. So, but Keir Starmer can sit very happily on 10, 5, 0. He could have 0% public approval. He could. There could be not a person in Britain that liked him, and he would still be prime minister.
And he'd be a great managerial leader because of it.
Yes.
And this, again, a point someone's making in chat here. The inverse is that Starmer is the best thing to happen to the right, in quotes, and that he and his globalist handlers are showing their hand and people are slowly noticing. Yes.
No, but
well,
no.
Well, yes, but no, because people are noticing, but what do they do?
I'm
run away for the easy alternative.
I'm going to vote for Kemi Badenoch.
Or Nigel Farage.
I'm going to vote for Nigel. Well, what this is, yes, it does. And what they do is, in noticing what the globalists are doing, they create energy for the political alternative. Who is the political alternative? Nigel Farage or Kemi Badenoch.
Yes, and it's damned if you do, damned if you don't. Because whether you've got a popular leader that might do what you think he's going to do, he will be steered away from the things you want. And if you have an unpopular leader that won't do what you want, you will then be sold an alternative who also won't do what you want. But he's at least theoretically more what you want.
But that's the trap. The trap is, Starmer means the right is winning. We're creating all this political energy by hating on Starmer, but you hating on Keir Starmer only adds political energy to legitimate candidates.
Yes.
If someone isn't a legitimate candidate, you can't vote for them. And if you can't vote for them, then within this system, they can never get near the level, or at least the visible levels of power, in quotes. They can be appointed, they can move themselves up to the elite consensus, but that would take being accepted by the global elite themselves, which doesn't happen. It's just the, again, de-link in your head the idea of popularity and power.
Yeah.
The two do not have to correlate.
Yes, and I'm not being sort of snarky or short with what people are suggesting in chat. These are fair points.
Yes. No, I'm not being snarky.
I'm saying this more from my
perspective. See, value-free wise, yes. That's a fine statement.
But what we need to understand is that we are dealing with, when you talk about the popularity of leaders, especially in a democracy, you are fundamentally dealing with a paradox. It has no solution. It's a tautology staring itself in the mirror that's the wrong colour the other way round, or whatever you want to think about it as, it's unsolvable.
Yes.
And that is by design.
Yes, it is. God, I'm trying to think. I don't think we've got any
Do you need more outro music? I can do that. Can do the outro music.
I'm actually double-checking I've not missed any donations. Thank you, Coney Current Year. Are there any plans for Nomos event this year? There should be at some point.
We might have a word on what's happened with some of that stuff at some point soon.
Yeah, we will do. That's kind of evolved a little bit, but we've got some quite interesting projects on the go. So hopefully you'll hear some from us something at some point, or maybe you won't. I don't know. I think that's basically all we've got for today. I forgot. I need to upload some more of my tracks, actually.
It's okay. I've got it. Do, 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 do. This is the outro music, we are on the way out. Goodbye. Do, 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 do.
Have a good night, everybody.
See ya.
Good night.